Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, we had a wild, action-packed week of golf, starting with the concession for the World Golf Championship, and we had a legend returning on the LPGA Tour as well. Plus, everything we're tuned into includes Montana, Bama, and the Golden Globes virtually. And this week's guest is Austin Truslow, who's playing on the Korn Ferry Tour right now. We talk about his very unique one-handed chipping style, which everyone's talking about in the world of golf right now. And we finish with our March Madness update, spring training, and a little talk on cereal when we hashtag always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at FlightScope. And Mike, you know there's a couple things that are a part of my daily routine, and one of them is that 10-minute golf workout that I talk about all the time in my backyard, and it's accompanied by the FlightScope Mevo. It's a super easy pocket-sized unit that I put right out in my backyard. I hit balls into my net, and I get exact yardages and club speed and all the essential data I need to know to figure out exactly how I'm hitting the golf ball. So if you want the Mevo too, you want to check out FlightScope Golf and check out their array of products. Our promo code is COL10 for 10% off of the Mevo unit. Again, check out FlightScope Golf. Tour pros like Bryson, Bubba Watson, and more use it. I love it in the backyard, and you can too. Promo code COL10, FlightScopeGolf.com.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Groove It Golf. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was a crazy, crazy week this past week in the world of golf. Let's start at what happened this weekend at Concession, brand new course for the WGC Workday Tournament. By the way, did you know the story of the Concession? Right?
Yeah, it's got something to do with the old Ryder Cup match, right?
Yeah, it was way back in the day. It was when it was America and England in the Ryder Cup, and it was Arnold Palmer conceded a putt on the 18th green to have the match and have the entire Ryder Cup, when everyone else probably would have, including today, probably would make this guy one of the best players from England putt out from 2 feet.
So the course was named in the honor of that concession itself and that old Ryder Cup. So very cool naming. I like that. I like the backstory on the course. Usually you don't get one like that. So that's unique. And the venue, like we saw, not only was it just like absolutely beautiful, you know how nice these Florida golf courses can get in perfect conditions to landscape and manicure them. There was not a blade out of place. And it led to an interesting array of like birdie fests and also some carnage around the greens at the same time.
Yeah, it was an interesting week. I think to really illustrate the carnage, we definitely need to talk about who was it again who shot like 8 over on 18.
Victor Hovland had 8 on 18, and he still shot, I believe, 68 or 69. That's the most impressive part of that stat line.
An 8. He was doing what the rest of us do. He was ping ponging all the way across the green on what was actually the 9th hole, actually, it looks
so
like.
So relatable. Such a relatable move there.
And yet he still finished 15 under, tie for second. They were all chasing Colin Morikawa. How upset are we that we did not put him at the top of our pick list for this week?
Yeah, this is the ultimate irony in picking these players every week. Again, we do them on Twitter. I've been red hot as of recently. I had back-to-back winners and was looking for the three-peat. I had Morikawa on the card at Riviera. You did too. Mm-hmm. We were excited to band together our superhero forces and get a winner collectively. That did not happen at all. Morikawa completely laid dud at Riviera. We left him off our cards this past week, and obviously you see what happens at Concession. He got the putter rolling, and in true fashion, we basically had everyone else who was in contention, but not the guy who got the win.
Yeah, you know, it certainly looked good when we were going into Saturday. My picks, Oosthuizen and Reed and Finau, were doing really well.
They were.
Your picks as well, Koepka, Webb Simpson were in it as well. But it just didn't happen.
No, that's okay. I mean, Morikawa, we've seen this now. I mean, you know, like we're at 4 wins now on tour for him, including a major last year. Like things are happening very fast for this kid's career. It is really rocket ship mode right now for Colin Morikawa. And when he gets a lead, it definitely, obviously I'm not making that comparison yet, but it does remind you of certain dominant players of their era where when he gets a lead, it seems very tough for him to give one up. And that was an example on full display last Sunday. Really gutsy stuff from Colin Morikawa. On a Tiger Red Sunday, too.
It was, of course, almost everyone out there wearing red on Sunday in memory of Tiger and hoping he has a quick recovery from. Really, let's be honest here. This is a career-ending injury, what he suffered.
Yeah, and this was weird because it happened last Tuesday, just after we recorded and before we released last week's episode, so we didn't have a chance to touch on this. But obviously, our world just stopped for moments. You know, no matter what you think about anything in Tiger Woods' past or anything, this was a human being that's life was in threat for a moment. And I got those scary flashbacks, Mike, when I saw everything happen last week. I was like, this looks just like the way we lost Kobe Bryant from this world. It was a very similar scenario, the way everything played out. It just thank God it looks like he is going to be able to make a recovery. It's going to be a long one, though. There's a long road ahead for Tiger, and just obviously our thoughts are with him collectively from the world of golf, and that was on display on Sunday.
Yeah, everyone who could was wearing red, who felt comfortable doing it. Phil Mickelson even needed to go buy a red shirt on the Champions Tour. He said he doesn't own any red in his wardrobe. He does now. Can I just say, though, that his little thing, he needed to set aside the jokes when he was talking during his presser about his red shirt and just be a little bit more serious. I was a little upset with Phil during that.
The only thing Phil loves more than himself is hearing himself tell a joke. Those are the two things that Phil loves the most. So yeah, he couldn't avoid the moment. Phil didn't get that win, by the way. He was going for 3 for 3 on the Champions Tour, but nonetheless, it was good to see a lot of red and black, and my red and black winner goes to Tommy Fleetwood. I think he dressed it the best. So shout out to Fleetwood for looking good in the Tiger Sunday red.
Let's touch on some other things that happened in the world of golf. Annika Sorenstam is back on the LPGA Tour. She's doing it because she wanted to practice on the course that will be hosting the senior LPGA Championship, and it is her backyard, literally her backyard.
Yes, literally lives on the 16th hole. Yes.
She made the cut, age 50, hasn't played in 13 years on the LPGA circuit, made the cut. Wow.
Just, what the hell? Wow. Like, people don't realize what an accomplishment this is, Mike. She does not play any tournaments at all anymore. She plays the game casually, but she's grown a family and kind of grown into being a full-time mom and lots of other business endeavors that she's gone through in the last decade or so since she left the game. Kind of did like a leaving on top thing. If you remember how dominant she was in the 2000s, leaving the game in 2007, probably pretty prematurely, just saunters back onto her home course 13 years later in an LPGA tournament and plays the weekend. That's really, really impressive stuff at age 50. Has to be shouted out. Annika, the GOAT, just getting it done, just casually walking back into the tournament game.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, not too bad. Nelly Korda won this tournament, the Gainbridge LPGA down there in Orlando. You know, I feel like the Korda, there's always a Korda at the top of the leaderboard these days from the LPGA.
Yeah, so 2 for 2 on the LPGA Tour. Jessica won a few weeks back in that playoff over Daniel Kang, and now her sister gets it done. So every LPGA event in 2021 has been won by one family. That's a good little stat line.
There you go.
I like that.
Nothing like nepotism in the LPGA.
That's right.
Let's also talk about the Puerto Rico Open. Of course, the WGC was an invite tournament, so we had the opposite tournament at the Puerto Rico. Brandon Grace winning big down there in Puerto Rico and doing so a month after losing his dad to COVID. That's just an emotional victory for sure for him.
Yeah, it is. And Mike, you know, we see this all the time in the game of golf. Isn't it funny how that works? You know, I think I look all the way back to, shout out to Ben Crenshaw from Austin, Texas. He lost his coach and instructor, Harvey Pienick, the week before the Masters that he won in 95, I believe. That was a very emotional win. You remember Tiger at Hoylake when he won the British Open shortly after his father, Earl, passed away. That was a very emotional win. It's something about loss in life that seemed to kind of give the best players, especially in the spotlight, a little bit of that moment of clarity, realizing that there's just much more to them three putting or missing a fairway or shooting a score in a golf tournament. And it's interesting how the game of golf kind of produces those moments and had another great one on display for Brandon Grace.
Yeah, especially for Brandon Grace going eagle birdie to finish and come back to win Just an incredible journey. It's
very, you know, very gutsy stuff from him. Yeah. He fell off too, and he's making a resurgence in the world golf ranking as a result of this and his recent play. And if you like the Puerto Rico Open as well too, be sure to stay tuned to this week's interview. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Puerto Rico Open with a past contestant there as well.
There you go. Let's talk about the mini tours, because we love some mini tours. Of course, we've had some Monday Q talk the last week as well, but this week we want to touch on the 5K mini tour, right?
Yeah, that's right. Shout out to a nice $5,000 win from our buddy Joseph Winslow, who we had on the podcast last year. Last week's guest, Neil Johnson, tweeted this out when he sends his graphic out of all the mini tour results in the world of golf. Be sure to follow him on Twitter. And Joseph Winslow getting it done, 9 under par for 2 rounds, won the tournament on a Florida mini tour by 3 shots. Always nice to see our friends of the show getting the win. And Mike, you and I love when they get the picture with the big oversized check. That's like the cherry on top of any golf tournament win. It's something you need to have almost to make it official. So I love seeing the big check from Joseph Winslow too.
Yeah, you know, we love those big checks, just like Happy Gilmore loves those big checks. And guess what? You called it last week.
I did. Yes. Victory lap moment for me right here. Yeah.
Pat yourself on the back. Why don't you cut yourself a big check there for $5 just so you can go ahead and cash it right now. Greenlit sequel to Happy Gilmore.
That was the easiest prediction in the world. Adam Sandler pop on social media, a guy who is never on social media, all of a sudden do a Happy Gilmore golf swing on Twitter and erupt the internet, and then Shooter immediately falls back. I was like, this smells. There's too much stink here. There's definitely a sequel in the works. So now the real open-ended question, Mike, is like, what do you expect out of a sequel to Happy Gilmore? Do you want to see Adam Sandler and actual like old man Shooter do something like on the PGA Tour Champions and some, you know, celebrity match? Or like, are we going to like reset with new characters? Like, how do you see this playing out?
I mean, I don't want this to be a reset in the sense of like, now Happy like lost his game and Shooter is tearing up the senior circuit and Happy needs to has a mentor that comes new mentor that comes along and teaches him how to play again, and he goes out and he comes from behind and beats Shooter to win.
You've got the script, don't you?
We already saw that movie 25 years ago. We don't need to see it again. So I don't know. We could go the Rocky bout and have, you know, them teaching their kids how to play, and they're out there doing it that way. I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, dad's on the bag, or maybe dad's in the gallery, you know, a Shooter versus Happy Gilmore fight as their sons duke it out. Maybe that could be fun. Maybe a little junior golf fight going on or something like that. So there's a lot of ideas potentially for us to ponder, but it sounds like we have officially greenlit the Happy Gilmore sequel. Well,
we will definitely see what happens. We're also going to be looking to see what happens this weekend at Bay Hill for the Arnold Palmer Invitational presented by MasterCard, because sponsors.
Yep.
So what do we think? This is usually, okay, we're getting real close now, of course, to the Players. We're getting, and then the Masters is like,
we're Players, a couple Florida match play coming in hot in 3.5 weeks here in Austin, and then 2 weeks to the Masters after that. So this is prime getting ready season. If you're the best in the world and you want to hit form, like now's the time.
So we got a couple guys, of course, this last week played really well. What are you thinking off the top of your head? Who do you think is going to do it?
The Rory pick is tempting, right? It's tempting. Yep. It's out there. I actually think a guy who I haven't mentioned or picked in several weeks, it's going to be time for the steak emoji, Mike, because I think this venue sets up pretty well for Beefy Bryson. I do. It's a longer, softer course, typically the way it plays. Par fives are a big advantage, and they have some serious length. Those extra yards might come into play if the rough is not too out of control. I need Bryson hitting at least 5 fairways around maybe to keep himself in contention.
Yep.
That's not a huge ask. So he's definitely going to be on my card. Matthew Fitzpatrick's another guy who had a good week last week. I've been tailing him as a recent. I think it's time to add him to the card. But for the full list of picks, follow us on Twitter. I'm going to be at Course of Life 1. And then you're going to follow suit Wednesday afternoon with your picks at MWRINC for this week's action at Bay Hill.
I'm going to throw out one name. We haven't talked about him in a while, but he's one of our favorite players, Kevin Na.
Is it time?
You know, well, I know, you never know.
I know,
yet.
He's, He's swimming around, what, 100 to 1 odds, 120 like that. To 1. That's always where we get him. So
he tied for 11th last week, had real good accuracy and putting. So if he can putt the ball, you know, that's all he needs to get that ball rolling in the green, in the cup.
Stay tuned, for those picks. So Wednesday afternoon, evening, we'll have our full cards out for who we like this week.
We will. Let's transition over to Tuned In, where we talk about what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. What you got there? What are you paying attention to?
Little MTV update for those out there who are in our age bracket who barely watch any anymore. Florida, I'm sure, Mike, you remember we had Josh Buoni on last February. I met him out in Scottsdale. We got to hit some balls together. He was featured on Florida, I'm sure, with his brother Jeremiah. Well, they shot their new season, but Mike, obviously, they couldn't do the partying in Florida, I'm sure, like they want to because of everything happening in 2020. Right. So they actually went out and they got a cabin in the woods in Missoula, Montana. So they're calling this season Montana Bama Shore. Tell me about Missoula, Montana then. It looks very scenic and quaint.
Well, gee, the last time I was there, the only time I was there would have been when I was in fifth grade. So that was a long time ago. beautiful country out there. Just rolling, you know, just emptiness with nothing but animals and beautiful, beautiful place. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I know you're not much for the trashy MTV reality, but I know you could appreciate this place they're staying. It's like a gigantic log cabin right on a huge flowing river, mountains in the background. It's quite scenic, if nothing else, to enjoy that on this season of Florida Bama Shore out in Montana. I was thinking, like, what's a random kind of state in the United States that you haven't been to? Because Montana is definitely on that list for me. Yeah. I don't even know if I'll ever get there, but it looks beautiful.
One of the best things out of Montana, I don't know if they've done it yet on the show, is huckleberries. It's kind of like a blueberry. It's a little different. They make everything out of huckleberries. Huckleberry jam, chocolate-covered huckleberries.
They'll get a nice cocktail with some huckleberry. That wouldn't surprise me at all. I've been watching that this season. They just got going last week.
And meanwhile, for me, this past weekend on Sunday night was the Golden Globes, brought to you by Zoom, or at least it. I don't know if Zoom really wants that, because they had muting on the very first winner, so we didn't get to hear things. It was just awkward all night on Zoom.
Man. What an egg in the face moment for the Golden Globes there. It was like, I was so excited. I was like, all right, award show season. I love watching the award shows. Yeah. And like, to slowly find out as the evening progressed, I was like, oh, we're not going to get like any red carpet conversation. Like, oh, we're not even going to get interviews like 6 feet apart with a long extended mic or anything like that. Like, this is all virtual. Yep. And lo and behold, the first award recipient starts talking, his big moment. I don't even know who it was. He's just completely on mute. Yep. They did him real dirty. They eventually came back to him, which was awkward. They already panned the camera away from him and basically just like chalked it up as a loss. And then like 15 seconds later, they came back to him like, and they finally got his piece in. Just awkward of all awkward moments.
I mean, we had that. And then we had, we get to ask whether Jason Sudeikis was high during his acceptance speech. So
there was something. He was something. I don't know if it was high or low or in between or out in a different planet, but there was something going on there.
Let's get into this week's guest, Alex. We love having different members of the Korn Ferry Tour on. We've had quite a few in our time here.
Definitely.
And they are golfers who are just one step away from the PGA Tour. And next week's guest, Austin Truslow, is currently super duper close to securing his tour card.
Yes. So he said it when you hear the interview, he tells us exactly where he's playing on the points list and what he needs to get to and what that looks like for him. So we get into kind of where his golf game's at now. And then obviously the one-handed chipping, I asked all sorts of questions about that. I know everyone's very curious whenever his name comes up in golf circles. They want to hear all about that. So we dive all the way into that and more. It's a great conversation.
We'll get into that in just a moment. But first, as always, we want to let you know that it is brought to you by our friends at Groove It Golf, makers of the Groove It Golf Brush. The Groove It Brush makes it easy to keep your clubs clean and ready to go on the course because it's got a built-in pump inside the brush that sprays water or cleaning solution right onto your club face. It's also got magnets so it can pop off your bag and head to the club instead of the club coming to your bag. And it's got a 3-year bristle guarantee. Wear out the brush head, cleaning your clubs within 3 years, send it back. It will get you a free replacement. Now that is reliability. So prepare to be amazed with the consistency and control that clean grooves will give you. Using your existing golf clubs with the Groove It, you'll get the spin, trajectory, and consistency you're looking for. So head on over to grooveitbrush.com and get your Groove It brush today.
Next up on the tee from Tampa, Florida, a.k.a. Tampa Bay. Now, he's playing out of the Korn Ferry Tour and has quite a unique style in his short game specifically. Looking forward to hearing more with this week's guest. It's Austin Truslow joining the Course of Life. Austin, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I know you're in Tampa now. I believe you grew up in South Florida as well. So knowing what I know about golf and how ubiquitous it is in Florida, what did it get to you at an early age, or how early were you playing the game?
Yeah, I think very few things are random events, and I don't think I would be a golfer if I didn't grow up where I grew up. I grew up in a small beach town called New Smyrna Beach, and I started playing when I was 4 years old. The local municipal golf course was, which is actually the last golf course Donald Ross ever designed. They allowed junior golfers to practice there for free up until they were 16 years old, and I grew up about 4 minutes down the road. So I grew up practicing there, and then there was another course like literally across the street you could walk to called Hidden Lakes. So I would practice there with my friends. Then my grandmother joined a private club about 10 minutes away, which I also was able to practice at. So I had, you know, three courses that I could play unlimited golf on all year round, starting from age four.
Nice.
So it's just kind of, you know, I played other sports, but golf was always something that I was drawn to because of the individual element of it.
Nice. And you had some great resources to practice your game growing up. That's really cool to hear. I'm curious because you are one of the taller guys on the Korn Ferry Tour. You're about 6'5". Was there ever any basketball in your childhood at all? Or did you always know you wanted to focus on golf first and foremost?
In elementary school, I liked basketball just as much. And I thought I could play professional basketball, but to be honest, I was never as good at basketball as I am at golf. And I just really like the individual element of golf. It was just, I'm more of an introvert, and it was always nice for me to be able to kind of be at peace by myself practicing in golf, whereas in basketball, you have the team element and there's more politics involved, and it created more stress for me. So I had more peace just playing golf.
Definitely. It's a game where you're able to kind of forge your own path, and you absolutely did that on your own terms. Let's talk about kind of how everything got going for you. You bypassed a lot of kind of the traditional college golf structure and turned pro at a young age. Just kind of talk about that time in your life and kind of what went into that decision at 19 and how that all kind of raveled out for you.
Well, I committed to the University of Virginia to play golf when I was early in my junior year of high school. And I had always thought I wanted to play junior golf, but what I didn't realize, I mean, not junior golf, college golf. Mm-hmm. But what I realized once I got to college was I was spoiled in high school. You know, I had unlimited golf and a great climate in Florida. I lived in the same city as my coach, Mike Bender, my junior and senior year. Went to high school my last 2 years at Lake Mary Preparatory School, and they were able to create a custom schedule for me to where I got out of class by 11:30 every day.
Oh, man.
Straight to the course.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, it was, and the thing about living in Orlando is, it's not so much that way this way anymore. It's becoming less and less so, but Orlando for the longest time has been the hub of professional golf, at least the hub of mini tour golf. So there were so many events for me to play even in high school on the mini tours. I mean, I played AJGAs, Florida Junior Tour events, and other junior golf tours, but I was still competing against pros on a monthly basis my last 3 years of high school. And once I got to University of Virginia, I realized how spoiled I was, you know, back in Orlando. And then I really wanted to get a business degree. And, you know, University of Virginia is a phenomenal school, and you have to apply to the business school after 2 years. And I just figured, you know, I guess up until that point, zero players on the golf team had ever actually gotten into the business school. Now there has been at least one person,
okay,
but at that point no one had done it. So I wanted to get a business degree, and then I also just realized how spoiled I was back in Florida. I mean, the weather was so much better. My coach was there. I had all my friends and family nearby, and more than anything, I also had the competition. So you know, I had this feedback loop that worked so well for me late in high school where, you know, I would compete, I would evaluate my performance, I would work hard on the elements I needed to improve while maintaining the things that I did well. I would practice, I would, you know, prepare for the event, the next event, I would perform, and then I'd reevaluate. And that feedback loop just got me so much better. When I first got to high school, I think my freshman year, junior golf scoreboard rankings were something I paid attention to. There are a lot of different ranking formats, but that one to me was the best because it included all of the junior tours.
Yeah.
And I was ranked in the 2000s, yeah, somewhere in the 2000s, my freshman year. And I had a goal of becoming number one in the country by the time I graduated from high school. And I never got to number one, but I got to number two, which was unbelievable because I was always a good junior golfer on a local level, but you know, going into high school, I had no success on a national level. So it was a really cool experience. And I feel like I just proved that system that I had in Central Florida worked so well for me. And, you know, once I got to Virginia, I quickly realized that. And it's nothing against the University of Virginia men's golf program. They have a phenomenal program and a great coach, but it was just something I was more comfortable back home. And so I came back home and started playing the mini tours again in the spring of 2015. And I enrolled at Rollins College, which is a small liberal arts school.
I had a friend that went there, Go Tars.
Oh yeah, Go Tars. It's a great school. I love it. It's a beautiful campus. Princeton Review rated it the most beautiful campus in the country a couple years ago. And I really enjoyed it there. I could live back in Lake Mary near my coach, Mike Bender, and drive 20 minutes to class. And I scheduled my classes between 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. so that I could practice pretty much, you know, all day. And then go to class, and sometimes I could even play mini tour events before I go to class.
Very cool.
So that's kind of how I did it. It's unconventional, but I was also able to get good, you know, scholarship there through Florida Bright Futures as well as academic scholarships. So the value was there, and I'm glad I did it. It was just what worked for me.
Very cool. So let's talk about the mini tours and getting to where you are on the Korn Ferry Tour right now. You know, I was going to ask about kind of the adjustment competition, but it sounds like you'd been very seasoned, especially in that part of the country and playing tournaments regularly. So once you kind of made that commitment full time to playing professionally, it was just kind of all systems go and getting back into that Orlando program that you've been talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Nice. Okay. Very cool. So now let's talk about where you sit on the Korn Ferry Tour now. I saw you'd had three top 10 finishes last year as well, too. We're in the midst of a mega season that seemingly has no start or end. It's a very long one, but I'm enjoying following it nonetheless. Where do you sit right now? Kind of where's your playing status and what are the goals that you're looking at for yourself ahead in 2021?
Well, I'm 45th on the points list right now. The next event's in 3 weeks. I actually couldn't play last week. I was in the event, but I busted my finger in a door right before the event. I couldn't grip. It was my left index finger, and I couldn't grip the club.
What was it, a hotel door? Was it on the road, or what was it?
No, it was literally men's locker room bathroom door the day of the tournament.
God, horrible timing.
It was horrible timing. It's just silly things like that sometimes happen. And you know, what's so frustrating about it is you have a simple injury like that, and you know, I wasn't able to, you know, interlock my finger and grip the club that day. But you know, had I done, I could, you know, have a more severe injury and be able to play. But you know, your hands are so important in golf. It was just a weird freak incident, and it's, my finger's feeling much better now, so I'm gonna be good to go in a couple of weeks, but it's taken longer than I thought. I figured I'd probably, you know, rest it for 3-4 days and be ready to practice, but I actually haven't hit balls yet. So
yeah, no, that's understandable. Don't rush it. And there is a little bit of a break in the schedule that works for you right now. So
yeah, the timing worked out.
Yeah.
The timing worked out.
Definitely. Cool. So that's exciting to see. You're at 45 now, looking to get inside those top spots, get to your tour card score.
Yeah, the goal, the goal is to finish in the top 25 on the points so that I have guaranteed PGA Tour status for next season. But, you know, fortunately, even if I'm unable to do that, the top 75 from my tour go to the tournament playoff series with the playoff series with the bottom, you know, 75 or so players from the PGA Tour, and then they give out an additional 25 cards from that. So, you know, the goal this year is to play every event, to work hard, just, you know, stick to what I know makes my game consistent and solid, and at the end of the year, hopefully I have PGA Tour status. If not, I'll reevaluate and work on what I need to get better for the next season.
Like it. And for those people who have not seen Austin's game, I've seen you not only playing on Korn Ferry events, but you've qualified for PGA Tour events as well too. We'll get to a fun moment from the Puerto Rico Open, which our audience just watched this past weekend. But let's talk about the unique part of your game that's definitely gotten a lot of attention in the world of golf, which is your chipping specifically, because you are known for hitting chip shots one-handed. So I have a few questions just to kind of set the table. First off, did chipping one-handed, did it start from a practice drill, just chipping with one hand, or was it something where you were genuinely just messing around and started liking the form and feel of it?
It started with a chipping drill. I started having severe chipping problems summer of my senior year of high school, and I mean for a solid 3 years or so I really couldn't chip. I mean, it was embarrassing. I would pray that if I missed a green, I would have like a fluffy lie in the rough or be in a bunker, because I just couldn't hit off of a tight fairway lie.
Interesting.
It was devastating. I contemplated quitting the game because of it. Unfortunately, you know, I've always been a good ball striker, so I don't miss that many greens. But obviously, you can't get around a golf course if you know you're not going to get up and down at least half the time when you miss a green. So I tinkered so much with different methods, and the one-handed drill I started using to expose the bounce and you know, be able to use the club the way it's designed to kind of scrape the ground rather than take a steep divot out of the ground. And I started chipping better with it, and it took a while to be able to trust in tournaments, but I realized relatively quickly once I started the drill that the drill helped me with one hand, but once I put the second hand on the club, I really didn't chip much better. So I realized that the one hand is probably the saving grace.
Interesting.
And I still work with two hands on the club too, and I've gotten better with it. But my one-handed chipping is pretty good. So
nice. And was it always left hand, or what? Did you try the right hand, or what?
It's the right hand. My left hand, the right hand is easier to expose bounce. Left is easier to maintain the lean.
And there's some stability there. I feel like it. Does it? Do you feel any extra strength in your arms at all? Or are you using different muscles in your arms chipping one-handed versus two-handed at all? Or does it still kind of feel like the same motion to you?
It's definitely a different motion. It's soft. I'm very soft with my wrist and my right elbow with my right arm when I'm chipping. I kind of feel like my right elbow folds and my wrist fold early, so I don't have a lot of width in my backswing. It's just kind of, it's very narrow and soft swing, and I really feel that softness to let the club head just fall on the ball rather than forcing the handle forward. Just kind of let gravity do the work, and it's a very soft motion. The soft motion works best for hitting, you know, soft shots off of tight lies, so I have to tinker with my setup a little bit depending on the shot, but overall, it's definitely helped.
Here's a fun question for you. Let's talk yardage. The one-handed chip, well, what does it max out at? What's your max yardage for the one-handed chip?
Well, with my 58 degree, which is my highest lofted club, about 25 yards with, like, I call it ball position two, which is like a stock position for me, which is, you know, it's about 2 inches inside my right big toe, or like 2 inches forward from my right big toe, because, you know, I can open it up and do a full swing, but it's not going to go as far, you know, when I open it up, but like with that position, I can carry it comfortably 25 yards.
Okay. Very cool. No, I appreciate you giving us a little light into that and how you have the different positions as well for different yardages and moments. I really want to say we had a past guest, the one-arm bandit, Garrett Bunting, who's on Instagram as well too. And we brought you up and he definitely follows a lot of your content. So what you're doing is an inspiration to even, you know, golfers that have one arm and are following your technique. So there's definitely a lot of people out there paying attention.
That's really cool to hear. I haven't heard that before.
Yeah, definitely give Garrett a follow. It's Garrett Bunting. He's the one-arm bandit on Instagram. A pretty accomplished golfer in his own right, and he loves watching your chipping technique as well.
That's awesome. You know, I haven't heard of anyone with one arm being influenced by it, but I definitely have inspired a few older golfers that struggle with chipping to try the one-handed method, and typically they prefer it.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, you need touch around the greens, and generally speaking, you want softer touch than harder touch. And that one-handed shot definitely offers that. So again, it's Austin Truslow 1 on Instagram. Let's talk about some highlights and some random tidbits before we sign off with you. I mentioned the Puerto Rico Open, which our audience just watched the PGA Tour play this past week. You had a very notable shot in Puerto Rico. It looked like just a complete slam dunk of a hole in one, but I want you to walk us through the shot because you posted it on your Instagram. What was that moment like for you?
That moment was the luckiest and most surreal moment on a golf course I've ever experienced by far. There's not even a close second. I earned a special exemption in that event after winning an independent mini tour event in Puerto Rico, and my caddy and I set a goal that week of getting a top 10. You know, leading up to that week, I'd been in Asia competing and I'd just missed, two cuts in a row by a lot before that PGA Tour event. And I flew from Australia directly to Puerto Rico and got in late. My clubs didn't arrive. I only got one practice round in.
Perfect.
And, I was jet lagged severely, and we set that goal, and you know what, you don't always accomplish your goal, but it was definitely something that was we thought a lot about all week, and I put myself in a good position going into, you know, after the first day I was up towards the top, and I kind of slipped back each round a few spots, and then that final round I was playing really well and it looked like I had an outside chance, but then I believe I bogeyed the 14th hole, and the 15th hole is a very gettable par 5, which I parred. And once I did that, it was pretty much the week was over, you know?
Yeah.
It was still going to be a solid finish. I still had a good chance to, you know, make more money than I've ever made on a golf course, but the top 10, which would get us into the Honda Classic, was pretty much impossible at that point. But I get up to the 16th hole, and it's a really difficult hole on that Sunday position because there's very little green to work with over that left bunker, and it's about a 200 or 190 to 200 yard shot. And the way the wind goes that time of year there, it's guaranteed going to be downwind on that hole. And it's strong winds every day, you know, 10 to 30 miles an hour, depending. And it was probably about a 15, 20 mile an hour wind. And my goal was just to hit an 8-iron middle of the green, which is the only way you can really keep it on the green. So if you land it on that left side with that downwind, you're going to go over the
green.
It's gone, yeah. And there's a hazard back behind the green you could possibly hit it into. So I hit 8-iron, and I pulled it right on the stick. And, we could tell it was going right at the flag, but you can't really see the bottom of the cup. And we didn't know it went in, but the camera guy was kind of waving his arms as if, you know, something crazy had happened. So we suspected it might have gone in, and we get up there, and sure enough, it landed right in the hole and kind of broken part of the cup. So that put me two strokes better for the tournament. And then I made about a 25 footer on 18 to make birdie and to finish tied for 10th on the number.
Awesome. Great check, too. And an awesome highlight. Again, check out Austin's Instagram for that shot. It's truly like a shocking hole in one, the way it aggressively goes in. So check that out. And I know that you are also a TaylorMade guy through and through. I love playing TaylorMade clubs myself as well, too. So I just want to quickly ask, I know you're working on all parts of your game, but what's maybe your favorite club in the bag these days, or what's working best for you?
You know, I really like the new fairway woods. I've never been someone that uses a lot of fairway woods. In fact, last season I hit 2-3 woods the entire season.
Wow.
I've always struggled with fairway woods for whatever reason, but the new Sim 2 fairway woods are the best fairway woods I've ever hit. And then I'm using these the new RDX black shaft by Hazardous to temper, and it's the best fairway wood shaft I've used as well. So I'm really liking that right now. It's adding an extra element to my game, because typically, you know, off the tee, if driver was too much club, I would just hit a bunt driver, which works really well when you have a straight tee shot, but when you kind of need to have a certain carry number but also not run through the fairway, it doesn't work out very well. So I needed a few times last season, I needed to hit, you know, a 5-wood off the tee or a 3-wood off the tee. That's just what the shot called for, but I just didn't feel comfortable enough to hit that. But and during the off season, working with the new woods, I've really gotten much better with that. And then, I mean, all the clubs are great. You know, I've been with TaylorMade for, it's been about 8 years now.
Wow.
And every year it just seems like they become a better and better club company. You know, when I first started working with them, they were known for their woods, but no one else really knew them for anything else. I mean, everyone knew that they made solid clubs, but now it's like you can go through the bag and argue that TaylorMade makes the best stuff.
Yeah, you got me interested in taking a look at the 3-wood specifically as well, too. That's a missing club in my bag, so I'll have to just take a second look at that at the store.
Exactly, and the golf ball. The golf ball's phenomenal. I mean, that's a big thing for TaylorMade. I mean, they've really created I think the best golf ball. So it's I'm really glad to be with them, and hopefully, you know, I can have a long career with them and, you know, keep seeing them improve as well.
Love that. Great profile of TaylorMade as well, too. I want to quickly talk about another target shooting activity in your life as well, too. How's the skeet shooting game on your end? Have you gotten any pointers recently to make your game better there?
You know, I haven't shot that many times. I'm definitely not as good at shooting as I am at golf. It's kind of embarrassing, actually.
Nice. Let's get to our 19th hole question, how we love to wrap each interview. Long day of practicing at your club, Austin, and you get into the clubhouse and it's time for like your favorite meal and your favorite drink of choice after a long day on the course. What do you usually go with?
Oh, you know, kind of a go-to for the longest time has been, you know, a medium rare steak, could be New York strip or filet or a sirloin. I like all steak, and a big sweet potato with some asparagus. And then to drink, you know, I don't know why, but I'm starting to really like red wine.
Nice and classy choice there. I like it.
I wouldn't have said that a year ago. I never really liked wine, but my girlfriend's gotten me into wine. So I'd say red wine, or if it wasn't red wine, I don't know. Probably maybe a cookies and cream milkshake.
Yes. Shout out to the milkshakes as well, too. Those always get some good answers to that question. Nice. Yeah. Awesome. Hey, Austin, thanks for joining the Course of Life. Again, looking forward to following you in the midst of this mega season on the Korn Ferry Tour. Hopefully we're seeing you at the top 25 at the end of it all, and hit them straight.
Thank you, Alex.
That interview with Austin Truslow is brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, the makers of the Phone Caddy. It's a one-of-a-kind phone holder for golfers designed to mount right onto the golf cart. The Phone Caddy works seamlessly with almost any phone model and Velcros onto the cart in seconds. Keep your yardage and scoring apps at your fingertips, change music, answer calls and texts, and more, all with the Phone Caddy. It's the most functional way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. And for our listeners, you can save 10% off your purchase with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. And now you can use that code to save 10% off their Patriotic line, typically excluded from any deal. Again, go head over to DesertFoxGolf.com, use the promo code COURSEOFLIFE, and save 10%. Head on over to DesertFoxGolf.com and get your Phone Caddy today. And we're back. Great interview there with Austin Truslow. One-handed chipping. You know, I remember back when I was a kid and learning golf, and I went to a couple of golf camps. We did one-handed putting, and I was always really good at one-handed putting. I'm not anymore, but I can't imagine doing one-handed chipping.
Yeah, so the only time I do it, and you'll appreciate the laziness here, is if I'm talking to a buddy of mine on the phone, I go out in my back patio, I'll start hitting chips with one hand and holding the phone with the other. So I have a little bit of practice there, but that's only like 5-10 yards. He said he maxes out. He can hit like 20-25 yards with the one-handed chip. I love how we talked about the different ball positions to how we can hit different yardage. One-handed chips as well, too. There's a lot of subtleties to it. And I appreciate Austin being a guy and a golfer who's like realistic and realized that there was a serious problem and like it needed to be diagnosed, no matter how strange or off-putting the diagnosis might look to the average golfer. I love the solution that he's come up with, and it's gotten him really far, and his game's in great shape right now. So I look forward to seeing more from him as well.
Yeah, that's incredible. We look forward to seeing his career progress and see him on the PGA Tour with a card for sure.
Next season. It's coming.
And if you like that interview with Austin, plus everything else we do here on this podcast, help us out. Give us a rating and review on the podcast app of your choice. That's huge.
Spotify, iHeart, Apple, Google. We're on YouTube. We're everywhere. Yeah,
And we'll love you forever and ever.
There's that too.
So take that as you want. You know who else may love someone for a little while is the Arizona Cardinals. J.J. Watt.
I went to that signing. It takes him a while to pick a restaurant. We thought it was going to take him a long time to pick a team, but it really didn't actually.
Yeah. What do you think of Arizona? Do you think he has decided to go to a winning team there in Arizona?
I think he has decided to go to a fun team and a fun city to live in.
Okay.
That's what I think. He's at the point in his career where he had a great legacy with Houston. He's definitely made his money. He's obviously getting a lot more. A fantastic contract that he worked out, guaranteed 20-something million.
Yeah.
So he's definitely not shying away from the money there, but it's an interesting landing spot for him. It's definitely a nice, safe one. You know, there's just not a ton of pressure playing for the Arizona Cardinals, generally speaking. It's a franchise with a young quarterback, so I'm really curious to see how it works out.
He's kind of decided that it's no longer worth going for a Super Bowl ring. He's just gonna, you know, have some fun.
Yeah, just have fun and live in Scottsdale and just play golf all during the off season. Just live the life. Actually, sounds great to me now that I've really drawn out. So,
I mean, we've made a lot of poor decisions in our life. Maybe not becoming NFL linebackers is one of them.
And speaking of Scottsdale, spring training, Mike, it's spring back. Training. I'm seeing it games is. On my screen now.
I know that the Yankees are like 1-1.
I sent a tweet out yesterday that people may think that I am above betting on spring training baseball. Well, they would be sorely mistaken because I've already placed a couple of small wagers on spring training. It's extremely impossible to predict. You have no idea when innings are going to end. Like sometimes they can just like call an inning off, just like if both teams mutually agree to, and they just want to switch pitchers or just get a guy out. Like, so there's a whole lot of unknowns, but the bottom line is that baseball's back on our screens and it's paradise. So at least we get that nice vista.
Yeah. I'm glad you're betting on something. Have you bet on the Red Sox yet? Because they've lost both games so far. So
I have not. Yeah. And that fancy pitcher that we paid a lot of money for got shelled immediately as soon as he stepped into the game. And it's the first week in March, and I'm already talking about Red Sox pitchers getting shelled. So that's a good sign.
It's going to be a great season. We are, however, looking forward to March Madness.
Yes, a little bit of fans too. Some actual applause in the background, which we haven't heard in sports in a while too, which would be nice. Bracket Pools Official. It's on Yahoo for anyone who does Yahoo Fantasy or Yahoo Pick'em at all. You can literally just search Course of Life. It's a public bracket that you can log into and sign into. Venmo for myself is AlexL9187, or shoot us a DM on Instagram at COL Podcast or at Course of Life Alex. $5 to get in. Let's have a good time and let's just, you know, make some random picks and enjoy March Madness. We lost out on it last year, so let's double enjoy it this year.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun times. I mean, what are you thinking? Give me your hot take right now. Who's gonna win it all?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I have no idea. All I know is that the two traditional powerhouses are not where they used to be, as casual fans would remember. And I do know that I'm going to be a big time bandwagon Texas Longhorn fan, being from Austin here. Oh, they got a top 10 team right now with some NBA talent. So don't be surprised if I have them going pretty far in my bracket. We'll see.
Okay. We'll certainly keep an eye on it. We'll see what happens. We'll talk more about it next week for sure. But for now, let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes, brought to you by our friends at Saucy. Promo code Course of Life to get $5 off your first delivery of beer, wine, and snacks. They operate in dozens of major cities. The Saucy app is yours. Promo code Course of Life for $5 off. Mike, I got to talk about a specific food, and I want to get your opinions on where it's at with you in your life now as we sit in our 30s here. Where do you sit with cereal? Because the news came out this past week that cereal has had a reconnaissance. 2020 was the biggest cereal sales year. March 2020 was a skyrocket in cereal sales due to everything going on in the world. And cereals like Grape Nuts and familiar cereals that you recognize seeing on the shelves are depleted, and inventory is running low. So where's your relationship with cereal right now?
Cereal is typically only in my house if we're making Chex Mix.
Yes. So that's a tried and true snack there. So you really don't do it for breakfast anymore, because neither do I, to be honest. No,
you know, I never really did do cereal at all. And I've always been a fan of dry cereal. I'm not a fan of milk in my cereal. I know that's controversial. That's a hot take.
Yeah, you
right
and my
there.
Wife, which blows my mind. I can't believe that you formed that alliance. It's just the strangest rock to sit on, but you're both there.
So, you know, there's that, but it's never, especially now being on a diet, it's just like, I'm not wasting, you know, it on cereal. I'm not
doing
that.
You know, the crappy part about cereal is we grew up watching 90s cartoons where they eloquently showed you a cereal commercial and they said, look, this bowl of cereal with a glass of milk and a glass of orange juice and a banana, that's part of this healthy breakfast. And they really tricked us into thinking that was a well-rounded breakfast.
Nope.
And it was not at all once we actually looked at the sugar contents, but man, ugh. Every once in a while, what I wouldn't do for a nice bowl of Cookie Crisp or Reese's Puffs or just something that's just so bad for you, but so amazing. So,
yeah, I mean,
cereal.
Every once in a while, you got to get a box of, Cinnamon Toast Crunch and just have that, you know.
That's just a classic. Yeah. That is a classic. Shout out to Cinnamon Toast Crunch and the CTC fans out there. So cereal having a big reconnaissance. Hit us up on social if there's cereal endeavors that you've gotten more into in the past year. That was hashtag always in with food and another great episode of The Course of Life. We'll see you all next week.